Good morning, everyone. If we could all take our seats, I would like to commence today's seminar. As you are undoubtedly aware, the focal point of this semester's module is the architectural and logistical scaffolding required for mega-scale astroparticle physics infrastructure. Today, we are going to dissect the highly convoluted decision-making process that culminated in the site selection and component procurement for the Abyssal Eye neutrino detector. The implementation of such unprecedented protocols was, to put it mildly, an exercise in navigating bureaucratic and geographical extremes. To provide a modicum of context, the attenuation of atmospheric muons necessitates an aquatic overburden of no less than 3 kilometers. This fundamental epistemological requirement instantly narrows our operational theater to the deep ocean. However, identifying a mere topographical depression of sufficient depth is merely the prologue to a profoundly labyrinthine vetting process. The ratification of any proposed site was entirely contingent upon a myriad of intersecting and frequently contradictory variables, ranging from the stabilization of the tectonic substrate to the proximity of onshore fiber optic trunk lines. It is this intricate dance of compromise and constraint that I wish to elucidate today, as it perfectly encapsulates the realities of contemporary multinational scientific endeavor. Initially, the preliminary site survey delineated 5 primary coordinates for potential deployment. I know many of you, having perused the literature from the preceding decade, might logically infer our initial inclinations. Historically, the utilization of the Mediterranean basin, specifically the Ionian Sea, was our standard operating procedure. Indeed, the Antares and KM3Net initiatives were heavily anchored in that region. Consequently, a significant faction within the international consortium presumed we would revert to this familiar locale, or perhaps utilize it for the secondary expansion we plan to execute next year. However, regarding the current primary endeavor, that specific geographical theater has been entirely excised from consideration. The Mediterranean is currently experiencing an unprecedented saturation of acoustic noise and bioluminescent interference stemming from an exponential increase in commercial shipping and deep-sea dredging. So, despite its historical utility, it was unequivocally removed from the current programmatic scope. We simply cannot risk the degradation of the signal-to-noise ratio in our photomultiplier arrays. This immediately forced us to pivot towards more remote, albeit logistically hostile, pelagic zones. The evaluation of these remote alternatives was subsequently subjected to a rather draconian filter by the Oversight Committee. The European Science Directorate, our primary funding apparatus, introduced a pair of non-negotiable, hard constraints. Firstly, the fiscal parameters delineated by the consortium dictated a strict expenditure cap. We only have £500 million allocated for the entirety of the aquatic deployment phase. Secondly, and perhaps more paralyzingly, the installation must be unequivocally completed by the second week of November, prior to the commencement of the global supply chain freeze and the onset of the Southern Ocean cyclone season. These constraints immediately initiated a brutal culling of our options. For instance, I was an ardent proponent of the Puerto Rico Trench periphery. The bathymetric profile there is absolutely exquisite, offering a sheer drop-off that would drastically minimize the requisite length of our umbilical cabling. I'd love to establish a permanent array there. It would be a crowning achievement for our institution. Yet the lead project manager killed the proposition almost instantly during our first plenary session. The rationale, unfortunately, was unassailable. The anomalous abyssal currents in that specific trench would necessitate custom-engineered, reinforced titanium housing for the optical modules, an acquisition that would instantly obliterate our £500 million financial ceiling. This precipitous rejection brought us to a highly contentious comparative analysis between 2 remaining heavyweights, the Mid-Atlantic Ridge and the Pacific Basin. The debates during this phase were extraordinarily protracted. Dr. Aris, representing the oceanographic contingent, vehemently advocated for the Atlantic option, citing the relatively thoroughly mapped topography, which would ostensibly expedite the deployment timeline. Conversely, my own preference leaned heavily towards the Pacific Basin, specifically a quadrant off the coast of Japan, primarily due to the pre-existing infrastructure left over from decommissioned tsunami warning arrays, which we could hypothetically cannibalize. However, the synthesis of our disparate requirements proved incompatible with both locations. The Atlantic site, while well mapped, exhibited microseismic tremors that would continuously misalign the optical sensors. The Pacific site, conversely, was politically entangled in a jurisdictional dispute regarding exclusive economic zones. We were deadlocked for weeks. Ultimately, recognizing that neither of our initial preferences could satisfy both the geological stability and the jurisdictional transparency required, we were compelled to abandon them. Through a grueling process of elimination, we eventually reached a consensus to ratify the Kerguelen Plateau in the southern Indian Ocean. It was a compromise that satisfied nobody perfectly, yet it was the only site that survived the intersection of all our hard constraints. Now, let me look at the ledger for the structural engineering bids. Wait, I'm misreading this projection. Actually, the secondary contingency fund wasn't sequestered as I previously stated. It was absorbed directly into the primary deployment budget to offset the Kerguelen logistical penalty. My apologies, the integration of these financial spreadsheets can be somewhat opaque. Returning to the site vetting, there is one more location that warrants discussion due to its pedagogical value: the Tonga Trench. That particular topographical depression would have been flawlessly optimal. It possessed the requisite depth, absolute seismic dormancy in the targeted quadrant, and negligible bioluminescent interference. It would have worked perfectly, provided the International Maritime Environmental Waiver had been ratified during the preceding legislative session, which, owing to unprecedented bureaucratic inertia at the United Nations level, it unequivocally was not. Because the waiver was stalled in committee, deploying there by our strict November deadline became a legal impossibility. Thus, a site of unparalleled scientific merit was disqualified by purely administrative temporal constraints. It's a sobering reminder that theoretical physics is inextricably tethered to geopolitical realities. Parallel to the geographical selection, the procurement of the optical modules themselves underwent a similarly tortuous vetting process, further illustrating the asymmetric nature of our problem solving. During a rather heated symposium, a junior researcher from the engineering faculty confidently asserted that the bioluminescence of deep sea fauna at the Kerguelen site would severely compromise the sensitivity of the photomultiplier tubes, thereby necessitating the immediate procurement of specialized high-density optical filters. Now, while he was entirely correct regarding the intensity and spectral frequency of the bioluminescent interference in that specific biome, the assertion that we required hardware filters was fundamentally flawed. The mitigation strategy, as corrected by the lead systems architect, relies entirely on algorithmic noise cancellation post-data acquisition, not on physical filtration, which would inadvertently attenuate the very Cherenkov radiation we are attempting to detect. This encapsulates the essence of megascale project management, a continuous triage of viable options against inflexible realities, where the most elegant theoretical solution is frequently discarded in favor of the most resilient pragmatic compromise. Next week, we will delve into the hydrodynamics of the deployment vehicles, but for now, I suggest you review the Kerguelen bathymetric charts uploaded to the faculty portal.